Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, hello, everyone. It's very nice to have you with us for another edition of the program. Today we have a smorgasbord of things, but first we're going to talk about parachute journalists. Now, back in March, you may remember, the Pacific nation of Vanuatu was hit by a devastating cyclone. And we wanted to talk about the situation in Vanuatu and also to correct a mistake that the BBC made on their coverage. So for that, we contacted Bruce Hill from Radio Australia's Pacific Beat program. And this is what he said.
BBC did something that they really shouldn't have. It was poorly researched, let's put it that way. A BBC reporter on an island saw a guy dig a bit of a hole in the sand in the beach and to cause it, and it filled up with some water, and he, you know, took some water and drank it. Now, and he misreported, I have to say, that people in Vanuatu were so desperate that they had been reduced to drinking seawater. If anyone who's lived in these islands knows, the rain filters through the limestone rock and comes out in the form of streams or springs at beaches. Cattle know this. Cattle will, you know, often pour the sand until a little pool forms. It's fresh water. It's drinking water. But the BBC reporter didn't know this, and so he reported that they're drinking seawater, and everyone, you know, flipped out, and we spent most of our day there trying to hose this rumor off.
That brings me to an interesting point, because just after Cyclone Pam devastated Vanuatu, there were a couple of international channels, television channels that I was viewing, and there were a few other mistakes that I'd heard, which kind of surprised me, because Vanuatu is not just one island; it's a series of islands. And on one channel, they were
a very, very large number of. Are you going to erase the whole thing of people calling it the island of Vanuatu? Yeah, that ticks me off as well.
Well, they were referring it to the island of Vanuatu, and then they sent a correspondent there, and I was just looking at this guy thinking, wait a second, a few weeks ago he was in Afghanistan, a few weeks ago before that he was in Israel, then he was in China, then he was in South Korea, then he was in Mexico, and then they just parachuted him down in Vanuatu. How is he going to cover this story?
Not as well as someone who knows it intimately. That's why the BBC made that mistake. A guy saw something and interpreted it in one way. If someone had been living there, if you'd actually had a correspondent based there or based in the region, they'd have known instinctively what this actually was. And this is part of the problem with a lot of modern journalism. There are fewer and fewer journalists actually turning out original reportage, and that's a huge problem. A lot of people are employed in what we call churnalism, just, you know, getting stuff from other media outlets, repackaging it, changing it around a little bit. Who's actually producing the stuff? Fewer and fewer people. Look, I'm sure that those journalists do the best job that they can, and we've all had to do it, but with, you know, the lack of actual people living in these countries, knowing the culture, knowing the language, knowing what's what from a ground-eye perspective, you're going to get these sort of mistakes made. With the best will in the world and the best correspondents, they are going to make these errors, unfortunately. They do the best they can with what they've got. Unfortunately, it's just not really enough these days.
Bruce Hill from Radio Australia's Pacific Beat program. Today we are talking about parachute journalists. And today seemed quite appropriate because this weekend, as of the recording of the show, we still don't know if it's going to be coming directly to Taiwan or just the outer rim of the typhoon will bring a lot of rain, but there is another typhoon that is coming towards Taiwan. Now, 2 weeks ago, Taiwan was hit by a huge typhoon, the worst that we've seen on the island since 2009. And some of the coverage by various international news outlets was, I have to say, quite astonishing. Now, there was a rule as a journalist that you don't just use one source. You have to use a couple of sources. But this was a case of either using one source or getting information off Facebook and really not double-checking. Now, we're going to have two reports. And as they go along, I'm going to stop them and explain what the problem is. The first one is a story filed by Seth Duane from CBS News.
The view from the International Space Station shows the size and strength of Typhoon Sotolor. The storm, equivalent to a Category 3 hurricane, has sustained winds of more than 120 miles per hour, with hurricane force winds extending 50 miles from its center. Huge waves pounded the coast as the most powerful storm to threaten Taiwan in years approached. Police protectively blocked off ocean walkways and some roads, and fishermen moved their boats into port. Authorities evacuated hundreds from their homes.
All right, we stopped tape. Now, this is the first mistake. Yes, authorities did evacuate people. It wasn't hundreds. It was actually thousands. More than 30,000 people that live along certain coastal areas were evacuated from their homes. So I'm not quite sure where he got hundreds from. Anyway, let's get back to the report from Seth Duane.
Earlier this week, the typhoon left a trail of destruction in Saipan, a U.S. territory. Some residents there are still without water or electricity. At one point, the storm intensified into a super typhoon, the strongest on the planet so far this year. In Taipei, a city of 7 million...
Okay, now he just said Taipei, a city of 7 million. I have been living in Taiwan for a number of years, and I can honestly tell you, the population of Taipei is not 7 million. The population of Taipei is 2 million. Now, does that mean then, for that weekend and for that typhoon, they brought in another 5 million people? I don't think so. But if anybody had gone on the internet and checked various amount of websites, they would have realized it's not 7 million. Let's get back to his report.
Residents prepared by taping windows, and some questioned whether skyscrapers here can withstand the high winds.
So he just said, can skyscrapers in Taipei handle this kind of typhoon? The very quick answer is yes. First of all, there aren't any skyscrapers in Taipei except for one, and that's the Taipei 101. Now the building, when it was designed, took this into account because Taiwan does get hit a few times a year by typhoons and is hit quite often by earthquakes. So way at the top of the Taipei 101 is a huge damper that weighs millions. I mean, it's really big and it's really heavy, and the purpose is that if the building or the ground is shaking, it will hold the building upright. So the answer is yes. The building will hold, and there's only one skyscraper.
And now rain is the real concern. They've already received around 30 inches of rain in parts of the mountains, making the threat of landslides real. Seth Doan, CBS News, Taipei, Taiwan.
Now, I should mention that CBS News does not have a correspondent in Taipei. Seth Duane is the CBS correspondent in Beijing. And for this typhoon, well, it was very simple. He flew to Taipei on a Thursday. And then when the typhoon passed and left Saturday, he left on a Monday. So he really wasn't here that long. We have another report now. This one was filed by the Washington correspondent for Global News in Canada, Arthi Pope. And as I did before, I will stop the tape to interject where they made mistakes.
Fighting against a powerful typhoon, crews carried stranded individuals to safety as waters continued to rush through parts of Taipei City. Typhoon Sudalur made landfall in eastern Taiwan early Saturday. It caused dozens of injuries and claimed lives, including a mother and her 8-year-old child who were swept out to sea.
Well, that's the first one. The mother and the child that were swept out to sea happened on the Thursday. In fact, 2 days even before the typhoon was near Taiwan. They were swept to sea because of the rising waters around the coast. So yes, it was connected, but the way she explained it, it was almost as if it happened the day the typhoon hit Taiwan.
At the storm's peak, wind gusts whipped up to 160 kilometers an hour, uprooting trees, flinging them onto roads, as billboards crashed down onto rain-soaked streets. A car dealer lost millions after his roof collapsed, crushing dozens of vehicles.
This is the second mistake that was made. Now, the car dealership in question, I actually located the guy. And yes, it is true that he did lose millions in cars. But that's millions in terms of Taiwan dollars, not Canadian dollars or U.S. dollars. If I convert the amount that he did lose in cars, which was around 5 million Taiwan dollars, that comes up to around $200,000 Canadian. So, not millions.
Power was knocked out in as many as 3.6 million households. In the mountain village of Taiyuan, the torrential...
All right, now, here's the biggie for me. I can honestly tell you, there is no mountain village of Taiyuan. Taiyuan village does not exist. There has never been a Taiyuan village in Taiwan. There is a district called Taiyuan District, or the equivalent would be state or province. But that's it. There's no Taoyuan village. Taoyuan is actually where the international airport is located. So the image that they were showing with this video was actually not Taoyuan village at all. It wasn't even, in fact, in Taoyuan district. It was Daxi village. So I don't know where they got Taoyuan village from, unless they're looking at an atlas that is, well, how shall we say, has a few mistakes. Let's get back to her report.
Downpour triggered landslides and flooding. She says things were very bad. Water started to come into the room at about 4 a.m. and soon got up to my stomach. The area received more than 250 millimeters of rain Saturday morning. Thousands were forced out of their homes. Some risked their lives to rescue those stuck in the mountainous area of New Taipei City.
The mountainous area of New Taipei City. Well, let me explain to you. Up until a few years ago, we had many different districts. We had Banqiao, we had Songshan, we had Xinjiang, and others as well. And what they did is, instead of having all these different districts, they made one big one, and it's called New Taipei City. I can tell you, New Taipei City is not a mountainous area. In fact, we are rather flat. Now, there are some areas of New Taipei City that do have mountains, but that's just on the outside of it. New Taipei City is flat as a pancake. So I'd really like to know where these mountains are. Oh, I suppose if I go on my rooftop at home, I can see mountains off in the distance. But that's actually not New Taipei City anymore. That's another district. So where are they getting these facts from? Where are they getting the fact that New Taipei City is a mountainous area? I'd very much like to know. Let's get back to her report.
There are still people up in the mountain, they say. The reporter asks who they're looking for. I have friends living up there. I want to look for them. By Saturday afternoon, the storm passed through Taiwan as it set its sights on mainland China, downgraded to a Category 1 storm. Weaker, but still not to be taken lightly. Evacuations forcing 160,000 people from their homes as 7,000 soldiers and police officers are mobilized. Now, southeastern China remains on high alert in anticipation of the powerful wind and rain Typhoon Sulidor will soon deliver. Arthi Pol, Global News, Washington.
That was Global News correspondent Arthi Pope, based in Washington, D.C. Now, I gave two examples right now of reporting that is not accurate and where major errors are made. The first one from Seth Duane. Well, he's the Beijing correspondent. He came here for a few days, headed right back to Beijing. I seriously doubt that he even spoke to a local fixer or a local producer. Arthi Pope, on the other hand, was just relying on information that was on the internet. But when she prepared her report, if she had actually done her homework, she could have gone to something called, the Central News Agency. Now, this is Taiwan's official news agency. It used to be run by the Government Information Office, but it's now a private company. And it is probably one of the best news services that we do have in Taiwan. All the information there was being updated every 15 minutes during this typhoon. That apparently wasn't done. And like I said, some of the things were just... I don't know where they came from. I really don't know where they came from. The one that really annoys me the most is, well, the mountainous area of New Taipei City. Really? Seems rather flat to me. I mean, this is where PCJ Radio International is located, and I don't live too far from here. So, where are they getting mountainous area? Same like Taoyuan Village, like we just heard a few moments ago. Taoyuan is a district. It's where the international airport is located. There is no village, and there has never been a village called Taoyuan Village. Now, this is something that does irk me from time to time. You may remember at the beginning of this year, there was a Trans-Asia flight that crashed a few moments after takeoff from the Songshan Taipei City Airport. The reporter that filed the story on Global News, and the story that was even online at the time, said that the flight crashed in New Taipei City. No, it didn't. It actually crashed in Taipei. It was nowhere near New Taipei City. In fact, New Taipei City, well, that's probably around 20 kilometers away. So it kind of amazes me that these kind of things happen. Now, it's really not so unusual, especially over the last few years, with a lot of staff changes at many news organizations. We're starting to see more sloppy reporting and reporters using fewer sources that they once did. Now, this is not all broadcasters. I chose CBS as one example, and I chose Global because there have been a number of other times where they covered Taiwan stories and got it so wrong. Of course, this is not the norm. It does happen from time to time that broadcasters will make mistakes. But when it's repeated over and over from certain broadcasters, it kind of has to make you wonder, how much else are they getting wrong? One more anecdote on this story. As the typhoon was going on, and I saw these stories being posted on the Global News website and on their Facebook page, I went to their Facebook page and I corrected them on some factual errors that they made in their reporting. Well, you wouldn't believe what happened. First, the corrections that I put up in the comments area on their Facebook page, well, that was deleted. The second thing that I thought was rather amusing is then they banned me from ever posting comments again. So, what's going on here? Do they not accept criticism? The idea, of course, of having a comments area on any Facebook page is to receive feedback from viewers and readers. And if a reader does see an error, for example, at Deutsche Welle or BBC or even CNN International, they will say, oh, thank you very much. We've looked into it and we did make a mistake and they corrected it. They didn't delete any comments and they didn't ban anybody from ever posting any comments. But Global News Canada decides to delete the comment and then ban me from posting ever again. Very strange, don't you think? Anyway, we, of course, will talk about this at some point again in the future, probably even next weekend, because who knows what they're going to say about Taiwan this weekend during our upcoming typhoon. But as I said at the beginning of the show, we still don't know if it's coming directly because we're recording the show, of course, a couple of days in advance. Anyway, you are listening to Media Network Plus coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Corey 105, it is speed 222 journal.
Speed 220, Corey 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Let's now go back to the early days of the BBC World Service. How many of you remember this?
Outlook. Introduced by Colin Hamilton.
Ah, yes, the old Outlook theme on the BBC World Service program Outlook. And by the way, Outlook is still on today. Now, the reason why we ran that is we just found out that Colin Hamilton died July 24th, 2015. He was murdered at his summer place in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. He worked at the BBC World Service for over 20 years, and before that spent a little time at Radio 2 on a program called Roundabout in 1968. He was British-born and educated. He was raised in Zimbabwe, Zambia, and spent a lot of time working at even local broadcasters in Africa, for example, the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation in Nairobi. He also did some work at BBC One and Radio 2, as I just mentioned. We managed to find some tape of the last program that he did for the BBC World Service in 1985. Let's take a listen to those closing moments.
As we wave farewell to the old year, with regret or relief as the case may be, that's the traditional tune which will ring out in raggedy chorus from many a Hogmanay party. Surely, though, there can't be many of us who've heard it in the Chinese version. But then, here on Outlook, we do try and bring you the unusual as well as the newsworthy. That found its way into a special edition from China. But whatever the language, the sentiments couldn't be more appropriate for introducing this final outlook of the old year, when we pause to remember just some of the hundreds of people and places we featured in 1985. Universally admired Bob Geldof, who brought together the talents of a legion of pop superstars to raise millions of pounds for aid to Africa. And it's with the sound of Africa that we leave you. Music from Uganda, brought to Britain by a Ugandan children's choir. With a peace agreement towards the end of this year, 1986 could mark a turning point in their home country. To them, and of course to you, wherever you might be, this is Colin Hamilton and all the Outlook team wishing you a happy, peaceful new year.
The late Colin Hamilton. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And before we bid our farewell, let's take a look at what we can expect propagation-wise and what's been happening. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through August 22nd. Normal to fair at low, middle, and high latitude bands. From Space Weather South Africa, predictions through August 22nd, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled, shortwave fade-outs unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, the four-day space weather forecast summary through August 24th. Solar activity expected to remain at low levels, just a slight 10% chance of moderate class flares. Geomagnetic activity generally quiet to unsettled, but with occasional active periods. From FK Janda of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet on August 21st, 31st, and September 9th. Quiet to unsettled on August 22nd to 25th and 28th to 30th. Active to disturbed August 26th and September 2nd. Quiet to active on August 27th, September 3rd, 4th, and 8th. Mostly quiet on September 1st, 5th, 6th, and 7th. Natural Resources Canada's 27-day magnetic activity forecast from August 14th shows the highest DRX nanoteslas in the polar and auroral zones on August 27th and 28th and September 3rd and 4th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field at active levels on August 23rd, 27th, September 2nd to 4th with ANK indices of 12 and 4, peaking at 22 and 5 on September 3rd. Lowest A's and K's of 5 and 2 on August 25th, 26th, and 30th to September 1st. solar flux rising from 85 on August 22nd to a peak of 105 on September 5th, down to 85 again by September 10th. Bill Hepburn's VHF-UHF-DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting all week along the northern Baja California coast and southern Alta California. August 22nd and 23rd over the eastern Mediterranean, and August 23rd to 25th over the western Mediterranean. All week around the Red Sea and Persian Gulf, near Kyushu and Okinawa, August 23rd and 24th, between Mozambique and Madagascar, August 21st to 24th.
All right, thank you very much, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of the program. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. You can, of course, find us online at www.pcjmedia.com and just click on the link for Media Network Plus. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Pellon, wishing you well. 73 and 88 to the ladies.